Welcome to Charlie Foxtrot, a Stargate Universe discussion podcast. My name is Boom.
And my name is Cetra. And we are going to watch Aftermath.
Yeah, I mean, the name Aftermath is a little weird because it doesn't really totally deal with the aftermath of what just happened in the last episode. It does it as a C story. A C story.
At best, yeah.
At best. And you don't even really realize it's happening until, like, episodes later when you're like, yeah, what happened to the L.A.? Sorry, that's what I'm going to call the Luishan Alliance because it's long for me.
Seems fair.
And then you remember that brief 3 seconds of them walking through the Stargate.
Yeah. Like, oh, we have shunted them off to a place. Farewell.
Farewell. But maybe it's talking about the aftermath of Rush's decisions, or I'm not really sure. I'm not good.
Yeah, I think they just like having clever one-word titles, and they're running out of cool words.
That's true.
A lot. I mean,
it should have been called After the Storm.
But that's not a clever one-word title.
I know, but it's a clever title. Mm. Taken from the montage last episode.
No.
And it would have fit, because this is After the Storm, and it's still shitty.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. Let's talk about the real plot, which happens at 1 minute and 21 seconds in, which is Rush in only his undershirt. Oh my god.
That's the only plot we care about.
That's
yeah, Rush is still being tortured.
Yeah, Rush's brain is not a great place to be, man.
I think it's interesting because, you know, we always discuss, like, the what you missed on Stargate Universe, but they're really telling as to, like, the plot threads that they're trying to pick up here and there, right? But we have not thought about the Nakai. Well, we briefly thought about them last episode, because we know it's associated with Chloe, probably. But yeah. We have not thought about the fact that Rush is still suffering through some pretty extreme PTSD due to him being tortured by them. And they hinted at that a little bit when he stayed up late with Chloe, and then shit hit the fan and no one cared about it. And now it's back to Rush needs to deal with his problems, and he doesn't.
Yeah, I felt like the previously on for this episode was almost too much. Like, I've watched this series 3 or 4 times, and they're flashing through so much stuff that, like, maybe picks up for me, but it's sure as heck not explaining it to someone who just tuned into Sci-Fi Channel this week and is trying to figure out what's going on.
You're right, it's like, hey, Nakai, oh, did you remember that code Rush was talking about? Oh, and Franklin, he's gone. Anyways, Rush is still tortured.
Yeah. Rush has problems. Also, he's talking to a lady that no one else can see and maybe isn't there, but seems completely real to him. Like,
yeah.
There is a great little, like, Lisa Park being competent but put upon in the beginning as Rush just wanders off. Because Rush has this problem now, right, of wanting to be in the real control center while he has to physically appear to be in their pretend control center. What do they call that? CIC? Command Interface Center?
I think that's what they call it. This is CIC. But
But
he doesn't know that the bridge exists yet, right? It's like there's something like a feeling driving into the bridge.
He has this moment and he's like, well, Destiny says that my brain needs to go this way.
Right. Which is a little weird, and I'm not
at this moment, it's classic Rush. Over the next couple episodes, we see this more, like, frantic, like, I have to go be alone in my thinking place, which I could have much more help in if I would just talk to a fucking person, but I won't because I'm Nicholas Rush.
Right. But can I just talk about real quick, though, with Jennifer Spence Park? She's, like, asking him to show her what he figured out. And he doesn't do it. What a shitty boss.
Oh, he's the worst boss.
Yeah, you can't expect your employees to take initiative if you don't show them how to take initiative. Like, she did. Like, she didn't wake him up because she's like, well, if I restart, it usually works. Or I'm trying to figure it out on my own. But he's like, well, here's how you do it. Bye. Yeah. And she's like, you didn't show me how to do it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the worst. The worst. But anyways, yeah, so Rush, when he finds the bridge, looks shady as fuck. I was trying to figure out if he knew the bridge existed or not. At this point.
Yeah, it's weird because he definitely looks like
he's entering a code in secret.
He knows where he's going. Like,
yeah.
He knows he doesn't want anyone to see him. So it's possible that he knew something was there.
Yeah.
like behind that particular door and that he had the code for it, but he didn't know what it was.
Wouldn't it be interesting if, like, when he interfaced with Destiny to get that, the number 42 or 46, I can't remember. How many DNA pairs do we have? Gene pairs?
I think it's, isn't it 26?
So it's 42. No, it's 52. Oh my god.
I don't think any of that's true.
How many chromosomes? No, because that's the whole code. Is the number is because it's how many chromosomes. 46. It's 46.
46.
Okay.
Okay.
So.
No. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 23 pairs. I wasn't that far off.
Yeah. I was like, wait, that's 52. I know that's wrong. I wonder if when he was interfacing and finding out the code and all that, if there wasn't some biological rewriting of his brain, because there's definitely a biological component to how Destiny functions. It has to be if there's an interface chair.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm wondering if while his program was working, trying to get that code to work and give them control of the ship, that maybe it was also decoding his own brain and trying to coax him in a certain direction.
Yeah.
That's just what my curiosity says.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he resisted the Nakai, is maybe he had some ancient rewriting in his brain.
Yeah, I mean, there's... That's a great thought, that the ship was trying to interpret him in... Having learned from Franklin that, like, a straight data dump would just overwhelm a person.
Right.
That it was trying to read back in a more communicative way. I mean, we're never told that the ship has an AI, but it really seems like the ship has an AI.
It has to.
It must. The way it selects planets, the way it knows the needs of things.
Remember when it was testing Young, like a battle simulator?
Oh, yeah. The ship clearly has an AI.
Yeah.
I think Rush has it basically right by the end of this episode that the ship is trying to interface through him,
right,
with him through these hallucinations. It's just that he's also tired and sleep deprived and like PTSD suffering. And so you can't trust anything that's happening through his brain. Exactly.
Right. Cause what do we know from the last episode is he tries to lay down and go to sleep and he doesn't.
Yep. And then this episode, like, he's asleep and waking back up from a nightmare. So,
yeah. So poor Rush. Poor Rush.
Yeah.
So anyways, everything lights up. Rush is like, jackpot! I don't get why bridges have windows. I know that it, like, turtles up when they're in battle and the windows close, but I still don't get why you put a bridge in an area that has windows. Wouldn't you want that in the most protected part of the ship?
No, if that's your command center, you need to be able to visually see what's going on around you, even if everything else is fucked.
I guess.
You need to be able to see if you're on a collision course for a planet.
Are you making fun of Deanna Troi?
No. No, not intentionally. But, like,
the battle bridge on the Enterprise is completely... There's no windows, it's all...
Yes, well, there's an argument to be made for that, too.
Yeah. So, I guess it's down to, like... So we just got a new work car. I promise this is going to track. Just give me a second, though. And the gear shifter is basically a radio knob. And I am pissed as hell because I'm looking at this and I'm like, what this is electronic. Means that's going to break easier and faster. And it's going to be more of a pain in the ass to fix. Why won't you just have a gear shifter? A straight up gear shifter that you use is way easier to fix than a knob that electronically tells a gear shifter to move.
Well, so I guess but realistically, you're already driving an automatic. That already is electronic.
Oh, well, I drive a manual, so.
Oh, see, I also drive a manual. A lot of people drive automatics. The vast majority are automatic. And so it's just sitting in drive. People never even think of a gear shift, really, apart from park, drive, reverse.
Okay, you're right. But I guess what I was saying is, like, the idea of where the bridge should be, I think, is kind of that concept of what I think a gear shift should do.
Yeah, it should be a physically functional place.
Yeah. Well, that's why manuals don't break ever.
There's a very powerful visual language that crosses a lot of different science fiction. And the bridge of a spaceship still resembles the bridge of a ship in a lot of ways. Right? And so, to make it obvious what Rush had found, I think it had to look like that. You know, it had to look like the bridge of an Enterprise or
Galactica, I mean, actually,
or whatever.
I did have that thought, though, because one of the charms that I like about Stargate Universe is that their command center is, like, you know, in the center of the ship. And it's so unlike any other show I've ever seen, right?
Yeah.
And so I feel like them switching to the bridge here, it's them giving us a visual cue that they're going to do more of exploring Stargate as opposed to, oh, fuck, we need to survive Stargate.
Which sadly...
And they kind
of
do.
I have a lot of weird thoughts about this episode as I'm working through it and kind of this season. Like, I think they didn't really go where they should have with that. Like,
I agree.
They kept throwing these... I mean, if you think about it, like, okay, this is episode 2 of season 2, and now they're going to try and, like, strand some people on a planet and someone's life is going to be in danger. And wasn't that happening in, like, episode 3 or 4 of last season as well? Like, the very first episode after air?
They didn't get stranded there. Like, Matt almost didn't make it back because he was trying to get water, right? Oh, no, he's trying to get the oxygen scrubbers.
How far in was it that Eli, Chloe, and Matt were stranded on that planet, though?
That was, like, that was right before the Tick episode, so that was, like, mid-season.
Okay. It just, it felt...
It was, like, 11, 12, somewhere around there.
Yeah. When you're thinking of it in context, it felt like, oh, okay, we're going to do this again, because this made people care about these characters, but then they don't handle it in the same way.
They did it really quickly, and they killed Riley.
Well, and we already care about those characters, right? Like, what they needed to do was strand a small team that had 2 Lucian Alliance people on it, so that we started to care about them.
Right. I agree. Like, that's my biggest disappointment of the season, is I thought that the Lucian Alliance was going to interrupt all the dynamics of the first season. And it's not that I didn't like the first season, I just don't need the first season twice. But instead, they did a steady campaign of get rid of the Lucian Alliance.
And, I mean, compared to if you look at a SG-1 or an Atlantis in terms of Stargates, like, they were very good at, okay, and not the greatest, I know there were some issues with Atlantis later on, but at like, letting other characters drift out, letting new characters drift in, introducing them over, you know, an intense arc so that you felt for them and you knew who they were the next time you saw them.
Right.
And it's like they just lost all of that. Like, are none of the showrunners the same? Come on.
I don't know. I can't answer that question. But anyways.
So Rush has an important conversation with the AI simulation of his dead wife.
He doesn't seem that surprised to see her, which kind of weirds me
out a bit. I've been at his level of sleep deprivation. I'm not at it now, but in 24 hours I will be.
Yeah.
And you lose intensity of emotion. You're just existing. He's not terrified, because that's what he is when he sleeps, and he's not manic or frantic or fighting or screaming anyone, because that's what he is when he's around other people.
Right.
And so really there's not a lot that can hit those two emotional extremes, including like, oh good, the ship has just told me that it's time to go open a door, and now it thinks it's being clever, and my wife is here. I'll just carry on, I guess.
Oh my god! Oh my god! You saying that just opened up an entire viewpoint for me. He opened a door. Remember in Human, that was his whole thing: is he had to just get a door and open it and leave to get out of the computer.
Yep.
And so you
found, it had to be the right door.
Right. He found a door, and there's Gloria. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
What? Yeah. What was the door the whole time when he was in Human? What was the answer the whole time? It was always Gloria.
Oh my god. And then, okay. We just
Stargate Universe,
show, but
two
then I'm
seasons.
Like, so good.
2 seasons of a man trying to get over betraying his dying wife.
Well, I think, here's the thing though. Like, Stargate Atlantis was good at starting threads, right? But SGU has the threads, it just doesn't treat the audience like idiots, so you have to like really look, and they're there, they really are there, it's just they don't handhold you.
Anyways,
we've talked about this for a while.
I mean, well, it's a Rush scene, so of course we did,
because Rush scenes are intense. Well, next we're to Gin, who we still don't know her name.
Yeah, pretty redhead talking to Rey about how destiny could make people into gods or something.
Yeah, you know how we kept talking about, like, what is the Lucian Alliance's deal? Why do they want this? And then it was here the whole time and we just forgot it. Apparently they want to become gods.
I do think it's interesting that Rey is being allowed to have these interviews, but we do see this pan to Greer.
Right.
And that, like, you know, clearly, one, he's hearing all these things, even if he's only, you know, guarding a quarter of the Lucian Alliance prisoners.
Right.
Like, and you know he's Greer, so you know he's guarding 90% of them. One, he's here to defend Rey, which is interesting.
Right. Which, and we never resolved their problems with each other.
Yeah, but he's, there's now a bigger threat, right?
He fucking stabbed her.
Yeah, well, he was kind of crazy.
Yeah, but that craziness was fed by his already latent distrust of her through the coup and through her putting him in jail.
I'm going to just hop on the Greer apologist ship and say we're past all of that.
All right. See, that's what, when they pan to Greer, right? And Camille, like, looks over at him. Like, I was trying to figure out, was she, like, being like, are you getting all this? Or was she being like, how are you reacting as Young's number two guy to me saying that I will make a decision with Young? Or, like, is she afraid about something? I could not decipher that look.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things. There's the, like, I have just made a statement that you probably know isn't verified with your commanding officer. Are you going to call me out in front of equivalently the enemy, right?
Right.
Someone we don't trust.
Oh, she's, which, like, daring him to do it.
Yeah, which Greer doesn't, which is the right freaking choice.
Right.
I think there's also, you know, Ginn is probably the most persuasive and obviously innocent of the Lucian Alliance that they have.
That's just funny because she straight up shot her commander.
Well,
so, is she?
Do they know that, though?
Yeah, they do. Because Telford was there. Which is another confusing thing.
Yeah, like Telford told something to Greer, I'm sure. Anyway, I mean, I think there is this side of, like, wanting to see if, because Camille, of course, is by nature always going to be the one that sympathizes.
Right.
And I think there's, you know, trying to see, like, what's another reaction to this right now? Is he also feeling like she's a human being, or does he still want to shoot her?
He's stone-facing it, though.
Well, of course he is. He's Ronald Greer.
But what's it? This is also where we learn how the Lucian Alliance gets its soldiers.
Yeah.
And I'm a little annoyed with Young's reaction to that in the future, because he's like, you know, just following your orders doesn't cut it. And it's true. I was just following orders. Does not protect you under the Geneva Conventions at all.
Yeah.
However, I think it's a little different when you are coerced into joining the army. And you are coerced to obey orders because you are afraid they will kill your family. And when you're out in the middle of space and no one from the Lucian Alliance will ever be able to communicate back to your family, I think it's a little bit easier to say no. And they did. So give him a little credit, Young.
Yeah, I think that's a part of the problem with their whole handling of the Lucian Alliance, is that they continue to treat them as other, and they don't make much of an effort to integrate them at all. And it's partially the kind of leader that Young and Telford, as Telford starts trying to step up to be a leader here too, they're not Jack O'Neill.
Right.
Or John Shepard, whose name I couldn't remember for a minute there. like, where they see the good in people, because they were already somewhat outsiders on their own.
Right.
Young and Telford come from inside the military structure. They are not outsiders, and they don't see a reason to be, or to trust those people, or, which is sad, because what we've seen in other parts of Young is, like, knowing his people and knowing what they're good at.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I'm like, how do you become one of your people, Young? Like, how do you bring new people in?
Well, I mean, he hasn't, right? Like, all his people are the people he decided on episode one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
And Eli.
Like, he's still, well, yeah, because he decided on Eli in episode one.
Yeah. Okay,
but, like,
true.
He's still not fully behind the science team.
Nope.
At all. Like, he's okay with them. But he still sees them as agents of Rush. With good reason. I mean, Brody has proven time and time again that he will do what Rush wants. So, I don't know. It's just interesting. And to me, what I miss, and I think Voyager, Star Trek Voyager, also cock this up a bit as well. But I love that idea of McKee going on this Federation ship and them having to work together for survival. I thought it was perfect. And while I don't think the execution really lasted for very long, like, didn't go well for a while, it's still a great idea, and they fucked it up in this episode, too. That's what they did.
Yeah.
So anyways, Gin calls them out on not giving them food, and Camille's like, you know, we're not eating either, which is proven later in a scene where they're all complaining about the prisoners getting food. And
yeah,
we get a moment with Riley. But here's my question. Telford joins the Lucian Alliance like he's a traitor. He's not a traitor. We've established this.
Yeah, no, this is obviously a spy double agent thing. But because they send him walking in all limping like he's hurt.
Right.
To imply that he's been tortured or something, I guess. Which seems dumb when they're just peacefully questioning other people.
Right? And they never show him, like, getting information from people. It's just they throw him in with the Lucian Alliance, he's limping, and then a little later he's like, oh, I used the communication stones. And you're like, when?
Yeah, well, and then next episode he's like, damn it, Everett, let me help. And I'm like, okay, you guys being on first name terms because you're equal rank is cute and everything, but, like, aren't you supposed to pretend a traitor? What's going on?
Right? I was like, but there's no reason to keep up the facade anymore at all.
Yeah, like, they're in control, unless they felt like the Lucian Alliance was plotting something, like...
Right, and they wanted to keep Telford... I mean, if that was the case, I like how Stargate Universe doesn't hold your hand, but in this case, they really should have said something. Like, Telford's there to make sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much going on. The other question is, my usual question about this show.
Yeah.
Was the last episode writer A, and now this is writer B, and he didn't get all the memos from writer A.
Right.
And is like, oh, so Telford's evil, so he goes in with Lucian Alliance. Rush and Young hate each other. Like, we're backtracking.
Well, I mean, it's written in a writer's room, right? Like, you have the main writer, but you're supposed to have people look it over and make sure.
Well, I have to wonder sometimes.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, that makes sense. But even later, like, it just doesn't make sense. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I'm going to.
I'm with you. Putting Telford back in with the Lucian Alliance makes about as much sense as Jericho coming out and code-breakering Kevin Owens and then Roman Reigns still getting a rematch. Like, it makes perfect sense in one person's head, but it's never explained to anyone, and so it looks stupid.
I actually thought that made sense. Like, I felt like he was giving Kevin Owens a little bit of retribution for what he had to go through. But he was still Kevin's friends, and that's why he co-braked. So yeah, to get the disqual.
It would have totally made sense to do the codebreaker to Owens if then Reigns didn't get a rematch.
Because yeah, the rematch part is the confusing part.
That's the stupid... But, I mean, everything they do with Roman is stupid. So, anyway, I'm sorry. I think some things are happening on the Stargate. Possibly yes. Young and Rey are talking to each other.
Yeah. Volker and... it's like the whole team talking about how they don't like the Lucian Alliance. And then Riley's like, you know what? Have some humanity, dudes.
Yeah. Riley being like, I'm a better person than all of you. And we're like, huh, way to stand up for yourself and have a character, Riley.
And then we're going to lose you. That's how you know Riley's going to die, is that he got a character.
It's interesting. It's interesting for even Lisa Park, the nicest, happiest person on the planet, to be like, I can't sleep because they would kill me.
Right. And I don't think that they're wrong to have these emotions. Like, Kiva was insane.
At the same time, these people are still locked up.
Right.
If this conversation was happening while Young had taken the three most cooperative volunteers and started letting them integrate based on their skills with teams on the ship, you know, and suddenly Gin was sitting at a table with the science team or trying to and being shunned like, you know, the not cool girl in high school. Like, If this conversation was happening then, when they had something to fear, I would understand that. But it seems like a while, like long enough that their food supplies are being taxed by the extra people and that kind of stuff.
Well,
and
I mean,
the military has kept Lucian Alliance completely under control.
I still don't blame her only in that. Because you know how Riley talks about, you know, we have to give them food because that's what it says about us as a society, right? And I think subconsciously watching what Kiva did to Rivers, you know, just shooting him point blank for no reason whatsoever, you know, putting everyone's lives in danger, she has judged that contingent by their, by what they did or with, by what they allowed their leader to do. And so yeah. I think she's, even if they're locked up, I think she is justifiably fearful that they could get out and cause havoc again.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But she's not doing anything about it. She's not saying starve them or anything like that. She's just saying, yeah. I have this feeling that needs to be validated. Brody, quite notably, says nothing.
Mm-hmm. Brody's very interesting, these couple of episodes, just the positions he chooses to take and not take and his reactions. Yeah. But
this episode, by the way, is another sign of his break from Rush, but we'll get to that. Young and Camille talk.
Yeah.
That's where he talks about not following orders.
He's wearing his cute smart boy glasses.
Yeah. Oh my god, his hair is insane. Did you see
that? Oh yeah. He's really fluffy.
And it just gets fluffier.
Yeah, because he's not willing to let anyone cut his hair. Which actually says something about, like, because that's an experience that a friend could do for you.
Yeah.
Or a lover could do for you. He's, like, it's a fairly intimate thing.
He's not the only one who doesn't get a haircut. Volker is getting really fluffy.
Well, Brody, yes, because Volker also has no one close to him, because Volker's awful.
True. That is true. Brody's hair is really gross. Rush is getting really flippy and long. And Eli.
Oh, yeah.
Eli. It's like all the men, their hair is looking really awful.
Yeah.
But the women.
Yeah. Rush's hair is like beyond soccer mom and into something worse now.
He's got the AJ Styles cut.
Someday we'll have to go back and listen to the episode where I first described that and then blame wrestling for all of this from there on out.
Oh, yeah, the flippy. I remember you talking about the hair flips.
Yeah, when we're talking about Telford being in Rush's body and having to mimic that, like, flipping the hair out of his face. Even though he didn't have the hair.
But he technically had the hair, but we were just saying, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, Gloria is making fun of Rush for not figuring out the ship. And Rush is like, well, it was designed for a crew. And she rightfully goes, yeah. You have a crew.
And he's like, yeah, but no.
He's like, shut up. And then she continues to make fun of him for keeping it a secret.
Yeah, she's just so calm and wry and but very interested.
Right.
In what he's doing, right? Like, she's not trying to distract him.
Right.
She's just on a bigger picture level, which is very interesting when you're talking to Rush, who is usually the big picture guy.
Right.
Well, and she's going, you know, he's caught up in these little puzzles. It's like, I need to know each individual thing. I need to understand all of it. And she's like, but there's a crew.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you tell them these things?
Yeah.
What if you consider letting them all learn with you? Which, whether it is the ship AI, mm-hmm. or his brain, is really an interesting thing to be being presented to him.
So I do have a theory about this, and we've talked about it a little on Tumblr. I feel like, A, it's him through the interface of the ship, number one, for this theory to work. Two, yeah. I think that Gloria is acting as his conscience, and that Franklin is acting as his self-doubt, because Gloria is constantly questioning all of his ethical decisions.
Mm.
In a much bigger picture way than he is capable of at the moment. And then Franklin is the one who corrects all of his calculations. And so, like, I feel like Franklin is actually the more likely candidate to actually be the ship. Because he goes, you know, like, well, those specs, those aren't, that's like a million years ago when they were good ships. Like, they got flaws now, man.
Yeah.
So I just think that there's an element. I think Franklin's real. I think Gloria is not. Partially.
So Gloria is the hallucination because he needs to have a conversation with someone.
Right. That's why she's like straight up like, I can't tell you how to make the ship go or stop. because she's him.
Yeah.
But I think the ship is using his, like, I think sometimes we have an inner monologue of someone we know within ourselves, especially someone who we knew as well as Gloria and Rush knew each other. And I think the ship is using that, like, background conversation in his own mind and just projecting it into Gloria, because that's the shape that it knows, because it saw it in the interface chair. And that's what's happening there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see
and
that.
And then I think Franklin is legit the ship. I think that is Franklin.
Yeah, because Franklin is what the ship took for itself. Right.
Like, he didn't necessarily die. He got absorbed. So he's in there.
Yeah.
And I think it's really telling that he only shows up every now and then, and it's always to point out something that only the ship would know. Whereas Gloria can't. Yeah. Gloria just says...
Is it... I was going to say, sorry, is it canonical that Franklin is stored in the ship in the way that that Mandy is later, or is that not?
I don't think it's canonical, but to me it makes sense, because where else would he have gone?
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway,
sorry, I interrupted a thought.
Yeah, no, that's my thoughts on the Rush-Franklin-Gloria thing.
Yeah.
Then he decides to talk, he decides to take everyone to a planet, because he doesn't understand why Destiny stops where it does. And so he's decided to take control. Yep.
And so he thinks he can do better because he is Rush, and who needs God when you are Nicholas Rush?
I mean, so far the ship has done all right. It has put them exactly where they needed to be. And when he starts taking control is when things go tits up even worse.
Well, exactly. And last season, he trusted the damn ship.
Right.
He treated the ship like it was magic and it would save them. And now he thinks he can do better on his own?
Well, I think that trust in the ship was betrayed when it stopped in front of the binary pulsar that almost killed everybody.
Oh. All right.
But yeah, funny thing that you said that magic thing. Like, he yells at someone later on where they're like, I don't know why it stopped here. And he's like, it's not magic. And you're like, actually, it kind of is.
Rush, you spent most of a year trying to convince us all that it was magic and we should just believe in the ship.
Exactly. Like, you
had science magic, for sure, right. But still magic.
You had an entire episode about your faith in the ship. It was downright religious. Yeah.
Ay vey. So he shows back up and Young is immediately suspicious and, as usual, Shifty as fuck. Rush is like, I was busy.
Which is like, usually the right answer for every other time. It's only this time he's lying. But it says a lot that Young has stopped questioning it, right? Like, in the past, he would have been like, busy doing what? Come on, show me on the logs where you were doing that. Now he's just like, all right, whatever, Rush. You're getting testy with me, and all I did was ask you a simple question. Like...
Clearly, there is something going on.
Yeah. Young suggests that Rush goes down to the planet. Not at all in, like, a why don't you do it kind of way. Just, like, why don't you just go down?
Take a break, bro.
Yeah. And Rush yells at him like he's being told that he doesn't want to go down. He's like, I got other shit to do. And Young's like, oh, my God, I didn't even, like, fucking suggest that you weren't doing your part.
Which is very, very weird because then... The literal next episode, Rush wants to go explore the whatever ship they encounter, and Young is like, nope, 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 no, nope, you're staying here, you don't get to.
Young wants him to do the opposite of whatever Rush wants to do.
Yeah, Young is a door, and Rush is a cat. And he wants to be on whichever side of Young he's not on, and Young does not want to oblige. And they just annoy each other, assuming this door has a personality.
I know exactly what cat you're talking about.
Oh, this is true of all house cats. Mercedes is no exception.
Oh, God. Oh,
heaven forbid. We're only a third of the way through this episode, and it's been an hour.
It's been an hour?
No, it hasn't. It's been 40 minutes.
Oh, fuck. I'm gonna make it longer and just be like, I have barn cats, so I never have that problem. They just go through any door you open.
Yes, you country chance. Girls and your cats that are not like indoor pets.
Outdoor cats are way smarter than indoor cats.
Well, yeah, that's why Mercedes is a much better cat than most other cats, because she's, like, 75% outdoors. She's just old now.
Yeah. All I can say is that my outdoor cats actually want affection, whereas indoor cats are like, no, I'm fine. Yeah. Spoiled little brats.
Yeah.
Whereas the outdoor cats are like, this is my only chance.
Yeah. No, indoor cats just develop all the neuroses of their owners. Which I guess is a whole other issue if we're describing Rush as a cat here.
Oh, no. But anyways, TJ goes down to the ship. I mean, goes down to the planet.
Yep, TJ. They do this nice moment of TJ packing up a very thorough medical kit,
right,
which explains why Riley stays alive for so long.
Yeah. Oh, good point.
Oh, yeah, like, she's got saline bags and IVs. She's got everything in her little
tool. And they have that nice little scene about, you know, are you 100%? No, not, but I'm the only one who can find medicinal, so I gotta go.
Yeah.
And Young does something he never does. He lets her go.
Oh my god.
It's almost like
when mature adult.
It's almost like when there's no baby connecting them. He can be a human. Anyways, everyone's on the shuttle. Riley gets some more lines because he's gonna die.
Yeah. There is a weird conversation, kind of speaking to your theory, between Franklin and Rush, in which Rush is like, or Franklin is like,
you're missing things.
Are you sure this is the right planet? Like, look at this, look at the way it is. There's no way that this planet is what you think it is.
Right, which is information that Rush can't tell himself that he's missing things if he's missing it. Does that
mean?
So that's why I think Franklin is real. I think.
And no, I like the idea of Franklin being the true representative of the AI, because the ship is going, I wouldn't have stopped here.
Right. For reasons.
Like, it's not the right place. Here's my reasoning. And then Rush goes, oh, shit.
Right. Like, super rotation of the atmosphere, heavy volcanic activity. And then Rush is like, oh, shit. And he checks the specs. And then he calls Scott. At least he has a conscience, right? Like, he calls Scott. But he still has to make an active decision to protect the bridge for only himself. And in doing so, he puts their lives in danger. And he knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And
he knows it. And we know he knows it because Gloria is there disapproving silently.
Yeah.
They're doing a very good job of showing us what these different voices in Rush's head mean.
Yeah.
But that's about all they're doing a good job of.
Yeah. I just think it's weird because I always thought the young Rush stuff was kind of over at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But his whole reasoning later is because he can't trust Young with the ship. He let the Lucian Alliance aboard. And
which is dumb and stupid and makes no sense. Like,
yeah, it doesn't.
There was no reason to reestablish this young Rush antagonism at the same level.
Right.
There can still be antagonism. They can still not fully trust each other.
Right.
But at the very least, Rush had come to respect Young as a leader.
Right.
Nobody chose to let the Lucian Alliance on board.
I don't get it. Like, yes, he was annoyed that Young did not kill all the Lucian Alliance, including Telford. Which also doesn't make sense that Young is against Telford this episode again. Because if Young cared about Telford so much, because his reasoning was, I didn't want to kill Rush, which is stupid because Rush was already out of the body once he went through the Stargate. Like, everyone knows that's how communication stones work.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just really confused by the relationship. Timelines.
Yeah. Yeah. It's strange, and it's, again, it feels like the development of relationships is not consistent.
Yeah.
And people double back on themselves occasionally. And over time, the development happens.
Right.
I think that's
real to life, right?
Yeah, I guess so. But you go back to hating someone just because forgot that you don't hate them anymore?
All right, Rush Apologist Society says he's sleep-deprived, and so he's relying on his baser instinct and knowledge about people.
Which is that he's a controlling, shifty son of a bitch, and he doesn't trust anyone.
Right, and so when it gets to the point when he should have told people, he already had fucked up so much in his sleep-deprived state that now he actually has to do the thing everyone thought he was doing in the first place, and that's protecting himself. which is, honestly, this is the first time he's actually done things to protect solely himself. And you know he's doing it because he keeps talking about how he's trying to protect the ship and the crew to save lives, which he never
and
does.
And now it's not true.
And now it's not true. He only does it when he when he's trying to convince himself. But honestly, he's trying to just protect himself now. Which makes sense, because if the what's happening in the, sorry, in the previously on, all it is about the Nakai and the torture, he must be in some mode, some PTSD triggered mode, where he is completely protecting himself. And it would make sense that he hates Young, because he would directly relate Young to his capture by the Nakai. And that hatred would exist. Boom! Done it!
All of which is, again, a reason, but not an excuse.
No, yeah, like, cool story, bro, still murder. Kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely.
Like, I mean, I think it's a good reason. I think it all makes sense, but he still had to have to come to terms with what happened.
It makes him an interesting, nuanced character. It does not make all the decisions he's making correct.
That's correct.
Or forgivable.
So, anyways, the ship crashes.
The ship crashes, boom! Yeah, and
Young talks to Brody, trying to figure out where Rush is.
Yeah, I was going to say, Brody is all alone in CIC, and Brody, like, you know, Young's first question, as always, where's Rush? And Brody's like, don't know, called him.
Yeah.
Like, not going to tell you shit, sir.
I don't know. I think this is kind of, like, one of the initial, like, scenes where you can really see that Brody is starting to think something's up. Like, I don't know.
Rush should be here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Brody always knows where Rush is.
Of course Brody is going to be the first person to notice that Rush's patterns are off, right? Yeah, like,
because he's always with Rush.
And Rush is always where you can best monitor a situation, right? And suddenly here's this serious thing happening, and he's not in the Control Interface Center. Where is he?
Yeah, Brody knows something.
He's not caring because he's Rush. So where is he?
So what I think this is, because I've talked about this a little bit in my fan fiction, limited query series, everybody. I think this is when he starts kind of going, like, realizing that Rush is hiding shit from him, and I think that really pisses him off in the future. I think this is the second reason for him to be breaking off from Rush. It's because he knows.
Well, because he's done everything to earn Rush's trust.
Yeah, and he didn't get it this time. The one time it was important.
And then you're right. We're back to this place where Rush is so deep in his own head that he's not communicating even with the people he should trust.
I mean, like, literally, if there's only one person on the ship to trust, it's Brody. For Rush.
Yeah.
Right.
Hell
there's
yeah.
Only one person. And honestly, in the case of everybody, Brody is the one to trust. Like, Young, he did exactly what Young wanted when he was, like, basically killing Rush/Telford. And, yeah. So, sucks for him. And, yeah, everyone keeps trusting Eli, who keeps betraying everybody all the time.
Yeah, Eli.
Anyways.
If Eli didn't have a flashing neon sign that said, I'm the main character, stapled to his forehead, he would have been punched by now.
I'm pretty sure Groot wants to sometimes. So anyways, Riley's legs are pinned.
Yeah, there's some definite issues.
Things are not going well. I'm pissed off that Scott continues to call James LT. Because, yes, I know she's the lieutenant, but he calls every other military personnel by their name. But not James. He wants to make sure. He's like, LT, go blah, blah, blah. And I was like, who's the LT? And I realized it was James. I was like, come on. She knows you're not ever going to get together. She's over it.
Yeah, because James wasn't damaged enough. Let's put James on the frickin' shuttle and let her be present when Riley dies, right? Let's do that. Seems great.
Right. And James is actually friends with Riley. Like, you see her talk. Ugh, whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah. So, and by the way, when they're, like, trying to clear out the Stargate, James is totally picking up bigger rocks than the boys are.
Oh, yeah.
I think Scott doesn't realize he's doing it. I think that he is purposely, but not realizing that it is on purpose, trying to let people know that there is nothing there, that there is only the command structure. That's why he calls her LT. Because in any other situation in the world, he would have called the person LT, for sure. And it wouldn't have been problematic. It's only problematic that on a ship with the people that he's with constantly every single fucking day, he calls them all by their names except for her.
Yeah.
So that bothered
me. He's a weirdo.
Yeah.
In the same way, interestingly, that next episode Telford calls Greer by his title only.
Oh yeah.
Like everybody else just calls him Greer, no matter what level they are.
Right.
But he calls him whatever he is, Sergeant Major.
I know he's a sergeant. I don't know if he's anything more than that.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. I had reviewed this episode and I was in the middle of the next one, so that's why I keep jumping forward. But okay. Meanwhile, on Destiny, there's a riot and Young murders a man, basically.
No, he's close to murdering a man, which is
There's blood coming out the back of his head. Guy's not healthy.
No, he's not healthy. Interesting that he tried to choke him out, which is an interesting foreshadow to Riley in the future.
Oh, God. By the way, spoilers, I guess, if you were watching this and not wanting spoilers, too late.
No, here's my honest-to-God opinion, and this pisses me off a little bit about Five-Year Mission, is that they're like, spoilers, because Brian hasn't seen it all. And I was like, people aren't going to listen to a podcast where you're not talking about the story overall.
No, yeah, you have to...
You have to analyze
from a greater context, yes, I think.
I agree.
That's where the value and the fun comes in, especially in this show where there's so much to see.
Right.
The second and the third and the millionth time through.
Right. So anyways, Riley fucking dies. But I thought it was an interesting metaphor. I don't know what the metaphor is, but he choked a guy out twice.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Well, yeah, that there's this rage in him, right? There is this rage which nearly led to murder.
Right. I think it's all because of the baby.
Well, yeah. Within the day, he's committing murder.
Right.
It is, you know, it's an assisted suicide, and it's very clearly at Riley's request, and it's almost unarguably the right thing to do for everything else involved, for everyone else involved. No one else there had the power to do it. Right. Watching him die more slowly and more painfully would have been much worse.
Right. And couldn't give him a gun because everyone would know that he had done it. So he had to do it.
Yeah, but this two sides of life and death in Young's hands within this episode is interesting.
But he doesn't get catharsis from doing it to Riley, whereas he would have gotten it from murdering an Aleutian Alliance soldier. So that's an interesting thing to note.
It's also interesting that he had stopped himself already and was looking at this unconscious man like, what the fuck? And then Telford ran for him and pulled him back.
Everett.
Yeah.
Sorry, I hate the name Everett. It just sounds stupid when people yell it. Everett!
I actually love it as a name, but I also used to live in a really shitty town called Everett. No offense, Everett, Washington. If you live there, I know you can't afford to live anywhere else. But,
Yeah.
So it's weird to me that way, and also I have a dragon named that, but anyway.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we also have dragons named after all the SGU characters.
Not all of them, but most of them now, yeah.
So, shit is going sideways on the planet. They can't get Riley out. Yeah. Destiny's jumped.
They can't get Riley out, and he would die if they did. Destiny's jumped, and Greer finds the Stargate. It's the best scene ever.
And he's just, he's like, found it. He's just legit standing on it.
He's just, nonchalantly standing on top of the buried Stargate.
How do they even, have a pulley system to get that up? Like, that's the most unbelievable part of this episode, is that in four hours...
They didn't. No. It's buried vertical.
I thought it was buried horizontal.
No, it was buried by a rock slide.
Oh,
so it stayed standing, but it's filled with dirt and rock.
Oh, I thought it was... And then they blow it up, and that's how it happened.
Okay. Yeah, they dig it clear, and then they blow it up to clear the rest of it.
Which I love that Eli talks. He's like, in all the other Stargate episodes, it's a bad idea to have incendiaries by a Stargate. And they just lampshade it by maybe it's not going to be powerful enough.
Yeah, and I mean, I do love that they go back and forth, and Scott is just like, look, you want me to do it or not?
Right.
And Eli's like, well, I guess do it. And Scott's like, okay, fire in the hole, beep.
But I mean, I felt like they had to have that scene, because they're like, wait, we have about 15 seasons of other Stargates.
Yeah.
Explosives
never being good near Stargates. These are special, more technologically advanced, more durable Stargates.
Maybe. Except I think they're older Stargates, aren't they?
Yeah, they would be.
Anyways, Maybe, well, sometimes older stuff is more durable. Like my car.
Yeah,
is more
that's
durable
true.
Than the stupid radio knob fan.
It's because they make all those new fangled Stargates out of plastic and shit.
Yeah.
The old ones, the metal ones, you can
steel.
Trust those. They'll run forever.
Right. For millions of years. So anyways, Gloria and Franklin are talking to him. Well, no, Gloria's talking to him, and Rush wants to talk to Franklin, and she's like, meh, can't help you with that.
No can do, bro.
No can do, bro.
Yeah.
Which still leads me to believe that Gloria is not necessarily the ship, totally.
Yeah. Well, and here we have, again, we have Rush making these justifications to himself or to Gloria, you know, like, Young is crazy, Young can't be trusted, and...
Right. Which would have made sense season one, but not this season.
Yeah. Well, but no, now you've explained it. Like, you're right. Rush is not himself.
No, he's reliving,
he's not,
like,
rational.
Episode 13 right now.
He's, yeah. He's years yeah. back.
I mean, I should write an essay on how SGU is actually a fairly good representation of how PTSD works, right? Because logically, what Rush is doing makes no sense, but it is logical to him because he's reliving an experience that no longer exists.
Well, yeah, PTSD and, I mean, I don't know what Rush was like before, but there's definitely shades of, like, almost bipolar depression in him. He has these very manic phases right. where he can do everything in the world, mm-hmm. and then he crashes and he can't handle any of it and he's not rational.
I don't know. I think he's manic way too much for him to be...
To be truly bipolar.
Truly bipolar, yeah. I don't think he really crashed. I think he has triggered crashes, which is not a bipolar thing.
Yeah, which is a different thing. Yeah.
I think he is just naturally... I think he's a little like me, whereas if you aren't doing something, then you're thinking about the inevitability and pointlessness of life. So you gotta fucking do something.
Yeah.
I think he purposely gives himself purpose.
There's some truly beautiful cinematography in the shuttle with TJ talking to Riley, like this person who has just lost someone and this person who's about to die, and
I really like
light
this
shining
scene.
In and it's beautiful.
I don't want to lose Riley because I had the same thoughts that he was talking about, right? Like, he survived the explosion in the first couple episodes. He got shot. He got, like, pretty badly concussed also in the first couple episodes. Like, he survived a lot. A ton. And then this is what takes him out? Like, what the fuck? He makes it to his 30th birthday and... Oh, yeah, he also survives not... Like, almost going to that planet that he wasn't...
Yeah.
That he would certainly have died on. And it's just so shit for him. But what I really like about it is just that TJ is up front. Like, she tries to hide that he's dying from him for, like, a brief second, and he calls her on it. And instead, they just have this frank conversation about what's gonna happen. And I think she's comforting to him. Like, he doesn't believe in God. And he does say, like, you know, my mom, she'd be praying for me. And I thought that was, like, a tacit request. Like, even though I don't believe, like, I'd like that comfort of my mother praying for me. And I think TJ actually does that in a way by telling him about Carmen and the alien race and that sort of afterlife she experienced.
And that she has, you know, that she has faith.
Yeah.
Which, you know, she's not saying,
she's
you know, like, and I
it.
Believe, I believe you'll be in heaven too.
Right.
Kiddo. Like, she's not being placating about it in that way, but she's saying, you know, here's the hope I have. Here's how it helps me.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously Riley comes to terms with this, or is at peace with it?
I mean, Riley, I think, was at peace with it pretty quick.
Yeah.
I think he knew he was a goner. Because if you can't feel your legs and they can't move the thing, what options are there when the ship's going to jump again?
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I liked that. Camille and Young go to talk to Varro.
Bring Varro to them.
Oh, sorry.
Whatever.
Sorry. They bring Varro to him. Varro apologizes. And Young is like, fuck you.
Young is really a dick, which, like, would make sense if they had spent a little more time building up this long-term Lucian Alliance conflict, you know,
right.
telling us about how Lucian Alliance killed Young's whole squad 5 years ago or something, right? Like, some reason for him to hate them as much as he does.
Well, I mean, the baby is probably all it is. Well, right,
the baby.
Like, we might not understand that concept very well, because I never lost a child.
I have days where I'm a little Sherlock, and I'm just right. like, yes, well, people die all the time. Why would they be upset about it?
People. And I have the more insensitive, equally insensitive issue of, like...
Well, it wasn't even Young's baby to worry about, really. TJ had made it very clear that he was to butt out.
Right.
But, like... And it's not like they intentionally killed the baby.
Right. And honestly, like, it was Young's people's fault that the baby got shot in the first place.
Yeah, like, Kiva was a psychopath, but if she'd really wanted to, like, be evil, she would have just shot TJ in the stomach to start with.
Well, but she wouldn't, because she needed a doctor.
Yeah, well, that's so true.
So, and then she leveraged that pregnancy against Young, not knowing that it was his, but just knowing that people are people.
TJ's grieving process, I am 100% on board with.
Right.
Young's particular brand of assholery, right. outside of this process, I don't find forgivable, because he is also going through that grief.
Right. So, I mean, that's all I can do to figure out why Young is doing the things that he's doing, is that he was very upset about the baby.
Yeah, well, he's also... Who knows? I mean, he's as sleep-deprived and as stressed out as Rush.
Right.
Maybe. I mean, maybe he can sleep, but...
He's drinking.
There's more people demanding on his time.
Right.
Even than there are on Rush's.
Right.
So... And... Yeah.
Let's skip the scene about Eli and the bomb, because we already talked about that.
Yep.
Telford uses the calm stones, unbeknownst to everyone. Young is annoyed because it's not authorized. Well, I'm sorry, but Telford's equal rank. He gets to do what he wants.
Yeah, if you're going to treat him like a military person again, then gets...
And remember, Telford, anyway. This is actually Telford's command. You only had temporary command, Young.
Yeah, interestingly, yeah, this whole Lucian Alliance situation and Rush... playing spy versus spy,
yeah.
actually got the real commander of the ship on board here.
Right. And now Young is getting all protective and like, fuck you, you want my position. And Telford's like, well, I mean, I've never said anything to that extent, but it is my position. That is true.
Yeah.
And but you mismanaged it so badly that Rush and Camille tried to essentially kick you off.
Yeah.
And with most of the science team, half of the civilians, like, not doing a great job, man. And it's just weird that he doesn't trust Telford. Like, he went from, like, Telford did everything to prove that he was brainwashed. He went at significant personal risk to help the SGU crew, even though that, like, their position was less tenable. And, like, so Telford was obviously brainwashed, and they became friends, and now suddenly he hates him again? It's weird. It doesn't make any sense. Like, Rush, I can say PTSD triggered. Young does not have that.
Yeah.
He's just a stubborn son of a bitch.
I don't know, man.
Anyways, hey, the gate worked.
Hey. Conveniently, there's no rocks in the event horizon.
I know. Well, they would have been vaporized, so that's nice. Basically, this is kind of the end of the episode almost, right? Like, they walk out to the ship. Greer greets Young, but Young does not greet Greer back. So
yeah, Young is also in this very weird mental place, obviously.
Right.
You're right. Like, there's basically nothing left of this episode. There's Young looking sad and Rush looking sad alone, and Young going down to the planet to kill Riley.
Well, I don't think he goes down to kill Riley. It just happens.
No, he goes down to the planet to see what's up.
He's doing what a commander's supposed to do, right? Like, you're supposed to convey the last wishes to the family.
Yeah.
And it's something he's done before.
Find a way, make a decision, right? Yeah. Like, if there's a decision to, we're gonna lift this shit off of him and get him out of here, even if it kills him.
Right.
And that's the decision to be made. Obviously, right away, from looking at TJ's face and what everyone else has told him, he knows that's not a real thing. So,
right. I mean, they could have tried and then just let Riley die much more painfully. But
yeah.
See, this is why I like Stargate Universes, because in any other fucking Stargate, it would have been, well, maybe not Atlantis, because Atlantis used to kill its people with impunity. But, like, in SG-1, they would have found a way. They always found a way.
Oh, yeah, but there were only 4 of them.
Yeah. So their powers were multiplied.
yeah, there weren't friggin' 12 of them. And
proportionally, their powers were better.
Yeah. I mean, also, we've discussed this before. Like, Rush is not Daniel Jackson, right. And Young is not Jack O'Neill, and things don't just work out for them.
Right. There's a reality to all of this.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to dwell on the Young killing Riley scene too much, but what I really think is powerful, and I want to know if it was in the script or if Luis Ferreira decided to do it, but he holds his breath when he is suffocating Riley.
Mm.
He holds his breath.
I noticed that.
Like he's trying to be in the same place.
And as he releases his hands, you hear this gasp.
Yeah.
And the first thought, because Riley's eyes are still open, is this thought of like, oh God, like he's still alive. What was he doing? Was he just like teasing him to be sure he was like, no, Riley's dead.
Right.
That was Young.
Yeah.
But it's super, super interesting.
It's almost like there's 2 guesses I have for this. There's one, the practical one, is he's holding his breath for as long as he can so he knows how long Riley will last, not breathing. The second reason is it's almost like he's trying to take on Riley's death as well, because he's heartbroken and just broken in general. We've discussed this before.
He's wanted to die too.
Right. And I'm saying that gasp of breath is him proving to himself that he still wants to live.
Yeah.
So, like, involuntarily, but...
Yeah.
That's what I read.
And we've talked through this whole thing that it's, you know, it's almost unequivocally the right decision, but it is still a death on his hands and his conscience.
Right.
That we know that he bears through the rest of this show.
Well, he puts it on Rush. Once he finds out that it's Rush's fault, essentially. Because it is Rush's fault. This is Rush's fault. And Rush tries to explain it away. Like, I did it because Young is crazy.
Jesus. Not grade A decisions, Nicholas. No. Just not.
But this is the first time where his decisions aren't good. So that's almost an interesting character development right there. Because this is the first time in 26 episodes that his reasoning is not flawless.
Well, okay, so let's have a moment here to discuss that his reasoning stopped being for the best when he decided he knew better than
the ship.
Their you know,
which he calls destiny.
Malicious and so and serendipitous god. Yeah.
Right, but he's like, now I know the ship is the destiny. And I'm like, then why are you fucking with the destiny?
Yeah.
Let the ship take you to places.
Also, like, okay, if you think that the ship showed you this command center.
Yeah.
Do you think it really showed it to you so you could keep it for yourself? Or do you think it showed it to you because you have a team?
Yeah.
That can have, you know, I don't know.
Should have showed it to
Brody.
He's
just being a fuckwit.
Yeah,
he's being a fuckwit right now. He should have shown it to Brody right away.
Yeah.
And then Brody would have helped him keep the fucking secret.
Yeah.
We do have a final sort of montage of everyone being really crushed in their own personal ways. Matt is crying. Young is crying.
Young is drinking, which who knows?
Young is drinking alone and crying. Matt is crying and being comforted by Chloe.
I do have Brody feels about Young drinking. And because Brody is the guy who serves the alcohol, so he's the only one who probably knows that Young is drinking as much as Young is.
Yeah. And, well, and there's a group of people also, you know, in the kind of room that has become their hangout bar.
Right.
With Brody still in it.
And Riley talking about how he misses going to funerals and weddings and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then
Eli is alone watching Riley's message, which is interesting.
What's interesting to me, though, is, like, you know, it's the stuff you miss on the Earth. And then it's showing all those things that he's talking about almost in a way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he says weddings, and it shows, like, Chloe and Scott. And they're obviously, they're not going to have, like, a wedding, but there's going to be something similar to it. And he's, like, funerals, and they're obviously having a funeral. It's not totally gone. You know, as long as there's other people.
Yeah, well, it's, and that, you know, Riley was saying it's hard being out here because you're missing that stuff back home.
Yeah.
And in the same way, like, now he's gone and he's missing even
more
what was here.
Yeah. That's sad. I like that it kind of ends with Eli watching it, though, because Eli is the only one that's truly established as Riley's friend.
Yeah. So then you're right. Rush calls them all. He leaves the bridge, which has windows.
Right.
Because he has to go meet them somewhere else.
Right.
And
interesting.
They're looking at something.
Which we know is a ship.
We know it's a seed ship and some shit is gonna go down. Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, it's an interesting little group that pulls together through their grief to come and, you know, answer the Rush call. Final thoughts. I think we've kind of covered all our deep, meaningful thoughts for this one.
I love Brody. Is that my final thought? That's been your final thought for the last 23 episodes. Shut up.
I love. It's a good final thought. I love the individual story arcs that are being carried through by individual actors.
Right.
I like a lot what is happening with Ray's character. I like what's happening with TJ's character.
Right.
You know, it's awful for her. She's growing and she's maturing as a person in ways that are really interesting and real.
Right.
Eli is dumb and boring. I like the changes that we're seeing in Brody. I don't understand why they are treating Rush and Young the way they are, but they're dealing with some shit, so there's that.
Yeah.
But overall, I feel like the team bond that I really love to see in a show like this,
mm-hmm.
we're losing because of how disparate and torn up people are, and because of it just not getting written that way.
Right.
So,
I mean, we know anyway. From wrestling, sometimes you have to break it before you make it better.
Yeah, if only they'd had time to make it better.
Jericho!
I'm real sorry.
Anyways, where can they find us?
We need now a second podcast. You can find us at sgupodcast.tumblr.com, as well as myself. I am Cetra Lynn, just about everywhere on the internet, but mostly Tumblr, Twitter, and I guess Instagram at this point. That's probably the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And where can they find you, Boom?
I am Boom Complains on both Instagram and Twitter. And I am Boom's Loving the Alien.tumblr.com. And the reason that is because I have a website where I analyze science fiction called lovingthealien.net. Boom.
And she's much better at the words than I am talking about Stargate. So.
It's no, cool and you've helped me write some pretty cracking articles, so that's nice. Anyways, bye.
Goodbye, internet.